it's almost impossible to really explore how a senior leader works without understanding the business to some degree. Of course, the work of coaching is really centered on the person, and yet understanding what's happening in the business started to become more prevalent in the conversation. So there's a balance, and that landed ultimately as working with the people on the strategy in lockstep. And
they keep telling us that it's all over for HR. The age of AI is upon us, and that means HR should be prepared to be decimated. We reject that message. The future of HR won't be handed to us. Instead, it'll be defined by those ready to experiment, adopt, and adapt. Future-proof HR invites these builders to share what they're trying, how it's going, what they've learned, and what's next. We are committed to arming HR with the AI insights to not just survive, but to thrive. Hello and welcome to the Future Proof HR Podcast, where we explore how forward-thinking HR leaders are preparing for disruption and redefining what it means to lead people in a changing world. I'm your host, Thomas Kunjapu, CEO of Cleary. Today's guest is Andy Martiniello, Chief People Officer at Equipment Ontario and Principal Coach at Martiniello Coaching and Consulting, an ICF certified executive coach and facilitator with a sales and HR tech background, working at strategy and innovation with Strategizer and also at Workday. Andy helps leaders and teams find meaning, spot patterns, and ship outcomes, pairing human insight with modern tools. Andy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Thomas. It's a real pleasure to be here with you.
Absolutely. And your background is so unique. Can you tell me a little bit about the how and the why you combine people and strategy?
Yeah.
And I don't mean people strategy. I mean, combine people and strategy.
Yeah. Thanks, Thomas. That was a framing that sort of struck me in the last couple of years as I continue to evolve what I do. And I guess on one lens, you could say it kind of happened by accident. I started in sales, fell into sales many, many years ago. And then just continued to build my sales career working for a variety of tech companies, predominantly in the HR space, moving into leadership roles. And there was one thing that kind of continued to burn away, and it was this interest in the coaching piece. It started probably 20 plus years ago. A friend of mine, I was living out in Vancouver, and she'd suggested, hey, you should come to this course. And it just lit me right up. And it was one of the early stage courses around coaching, co-active coaching model. And I just really fell in love. I took that right in. And while initially I thought, oh, maybe I'll shift over into the world of coaching, I recognized that I wasn't ready. And so I just kept bringing all the tools, the core competencies from the world of coaching and integrated them into the work I was doing as a salesperson and as a sales leader. You can see just a lot of parallels in those core competencies. And that continued to build. And over the years, I just kept creeping closer and closer to doing the work of coaching and then ultimately facilitating. The time I spent at Strategizer, you'd mentioned that, was a real pivotal piece because it added the strategy piece. So while that organization is really predicated around innovation and getting a deeper understanding of how does a business work and what does their business model look like, I learned at the feet of one of the experts, probably the preeminent expert in that space, Alex Osterwalder, who created the business model canvas. And that added a really important piece to the work I was doing as a coach. And so I found myself, as I was going into organizations and starting to work with their senior leaders under the heading of executive coach, bringing in conversation around how's the business running? Because it's almost impossible to really explore how a senior leader works without understanding the business to some degree. Of course, the work of coaching is really centered on the person, and yet understanding what's happening in the business started to become more prevalent in the conversation. So there's a balance, and that landed ultimately as working with the people on the strategy in lockstep. And so understanding what is the strategy of this organization? How are you going to market? What does your business model look like? And then how do the people function in that to bring it to life? Because of course, every organization is just a group of people coming together to make something happen.
So it sounds like it's been this like organic long journey that's put all these pieces together for you. And I let off asking you about strategy, which is one element, but a lot of your career was actually directly in sales, right? Tell me about how that's influenced your approach, if at all, right? So I don't know, what do you put in towards coaching with a sales leadership or sales background versus the things that you see generally missing or is that you find is distinct from most coaching or people operations or HR practices?
Yeah. I wonder if maybe part of that answer is so much of what we do both under the heading of sales and in coaching is aligning with human behavior, right? Is attempting to gain an understanding of human behavior and result, see where can we influence something or create a space for somebody to discover something. And I think, again, if we're thinking about sales and coaching, there are parallels in all of those things. So as a salesperson, how do I create a space for you to find a solution, right? That's ultimately what, you know, good salespeople do is they partner with an individual or a team to help them understand what is the problem at hand and how do they find a solution. So what's current state? What does future state look like? And what is the tension that exists between the two? And so that happens in a sales conversation, and that happens in a coaching conversation. Of course, different elements and engagements, but fundamentally, there is a really important correlation between those two things. And so I think that helped me sort of transition more fluidly. I also wonder, too, if wherever I do bring value for organizations, it might be amplified by the fact that I kind of grew up working in a sales environment. And I'll say, I was working for large organizations, many of them US-based. There's a certain philosophy and an intensity that goes with that, that really commits to outcomes. And I feel like that created a bit of an edge for me that, like, personally almost to say, hey, if we're not driving to outcomes, why are we here? And I feel like that edge resonates with senior leaders who are looking to have the experience personally and create the right environment for their employees and balance that with, we got to get things done. Let's get out there. And if we're not, well, let's make different choices, right? And let's be assertive in those choices. So I think there's something in this sort of assertiveness and that clarity and intensity that comes over from my sales background into the work I do as a coach and a consultant.
Because there's such an outcome focus, right? And, you know, half your paycheck or more can be relying on the actual outcome, and you grow in that year over year, decade after decade. That creates a certain kind of animal, right?
That's it. And just one other point on that, I have heard, and maybe a bit of a story I make up, is that senior leaders think about coaching sometimes and go, is that just like a big warm hug for everybody? And yeah, the answer is yes. The more ways to do, right? Yeah. Coaching does provide that. And it's as critically important to drive to those outcomes, to be accountable to those outcomes. It's like Amy Edmondson, the creator of the individual that coined the phrase and the researcher behind psychological safety, says there has to be this balance between psychological safety, that sense that I can say and do what I feel is right without fear of recrimination. And at the same time, I have to be held accountable to outcomes. And she makes that a very strong point. And that really resonates with me. And I think that resonates with leaders. It's yes, you have to have the right experience. You have to feel comfortable and safe and feel lit in the work that you do. And you can't lose sight of what's our goal, right? What are we trying to get done? And embedded in that is a choice. If I no longer want to get to that goal, then I need to make a different choice. And I think that's...
You said something that struck me in that earlier part there, which is I want to repeat slowly and make sure I digest, which is that both in sales and in coaching, what you're doing is creating the space for the person to discover the solution and maybe even discover the problem, depending on where you are at the conversation. And I notice you're framing that as such that the agency is with the client or with the person being coached, as opposed to pushing or telling. So I guess that's a difference when you have real buy-in. Is that kind of the distinction that you're going for there?
Yeah, absolutely. That is a core shared piece, I would say, between both selling and in coaching. One distinction, though, above and beyond, and I would say a divergence, is as a salesperson, I do come in with an agenda. Like, I do want to partner with you to help you find a solution. And it's important that it's my solution that you choose, right? I'm finding that balance between, hey, I want you to get what you need, and I want that to be what I have. With coaching, it is critically important that we don't go in with an agenda for the person. We go in with an agenda for the structure, for what we're holding here, for sure. But whatever you fill that agenda with is entirely yours. And at the end of the day, whatever you choose to do is up to you. Now, I will say, though, that circling back to that as a coach, if at the end of our coaching relationship, you find yourself exactly where you were and nothing has shifted, I would take that heavily. It wouldn't work for me. I would think that, while again, it's not my agenda to drive whatever it is that you want, it is within my agenda to say you shifted, you grew in some way, or something changed for you, because that's why we're here in the first place. And that could be to fix a problem, or it could be to expand. This is another important thing that a lot of individuals, and I do find this, I work predominantly with executives, so that's the bias, that's the filter I bring, is they say, well, what if there's no problem to fix? That's okay. Everybody tends to have something to work on. But if it's not something that really stands up, what could you do more? Where could you expand? What's really working today for you? And if you were to focus some more energy and time on it, it would exponentially grow by a factor of some 10x or whatever it might be. That's something that more, essentially almost always results in the individual, when they start to think of that, starts to uncover, okay, well, to do that, here's what's holding you back. Oh, okay, so here's something that is creating some kind of constraint. It's not an enormous problem, but there's a constraint there. And if we unlock that, you'd continue to build something, or maybe discover something that you hadn't even thought of in the first place. So those are the opportunities. But if that's what happened, I would say that is in my agenda for a coach conversation, is if, again, at the end of that cycle, the individual's going, nothing, I got nothing from this. Well, that would be a failure for me. I would consider that way. Yeah.
Got it. So you're just looking to create like motion, not for its own sake, but in the belief that there's growth available for all of us, if not just to improve the positive. But then you also said that one of the key distinctions is that you don't necessarily have an agenda. The how things happen isn't preordained as you go into conversation. And that's a common thing I hear in coaching stance. Now, I want to challenge that a little bit within the context of a lot of HR leaders, right, who do this role part-time. So you're both a part of the stakeholder group in some ways, right? If you're a part of the C-suite, and yet you also play this part-time role and often significant role. One of the many important things that you might do as a chief people officer is to play this coach role for the executives that you're surrounded by. Now, in that case, given that you're deep in, it's very different, I would argue, than an engagement where you're just coming and working individually with a person. You're coaching a series of people within the context of an organization that you yourself are a part of and will be developing opinions on how to win entirely. So how do you approach that in those instances? Or what advice would you have for peer CPOs, CHROs who are obviously often doing that, right?
Yeah.
That's part of their work.
Yeah, it's an excellent noticing, Thomas. It's a really good point. Going into this particular exercise and project that I'm in, it's critically important that I maintain some neutrality that says I'm finding that balance between those individual interactions, working with them and exploring. Of course, and I work with a group of incredibly talented, deeply experienced, highly intelligent people who are really striving to create an outcome and are working in a very complex environment because they're merging two organizations. And so then there's lots of history and all of those things. So coming into it and say, okay, how well can I gain an understanding of what is the, and I'll go back to that word agenda, what is the agenda of the business? What does the business need? And how do we place that as our North Star? And in that, I leverage that to help maintain that neutrality, because you're exactly right. If I reflect on a year ago, it was different than it is today, because today I'm so immersed in the day-to-day and the conversations, not just with the leadership team, but with the entire organization, because I do go across the complex and work with people at every level. And so I gain an understanding, and I, of course, see the patterns and one of the core things that I'm there to do. And there is a level of energy drain that starts to come in and say, boy, this pattern is just persisting. Whereas when you're external, you can go, there's the pattern. Let's talk about ways that you can work out. Talk to you in a couple of weeks. Tell me how that, right? Here I'm very embedded in the pattern. And so there is a different energetic engagement with that. There's no question. And yet the importance of it, the approach stays the same. It's always, what does the business need? And then what do the teams need? And what do the individuals need? And so we can think of those three as critical agendas that we're gaining a deep understanding of, seeing how they work together. Where might they be in conflict, and how do we unlock and smooth those areas of conflict between them? It is a very complicated sort of story to try to figure all that out. But being there, being so immersed in it, gives me the opportunity to really understand what that looks like. Then, of course, gaining a deep understanding over time of the individuals, always staying relevant. And this is something that it's for me, self-work regularly, is to stay out of my own interpretation, right? What's my opinion? Who might I just be connecting more with? Not because of their attitude or approach, but just because people, we have a tendency to drift more towards one person than another, just as our nature, right? And so how do I enable that relationship but at the same time not let it catch me up? So now suddenly I'm starting to drift to an opinion that might be from time to time in opposition to someone else's,
right?
Or neutral in that. So it's a lot of self-work for me, but as a coach, it's phenomenal. It's an amazing sort of training ground for that, to keep me sharp on that. And so it really adds a lot. So I don't know if that really addresses the question. It is a complicated thing to do and to really do effectively, but it's certainly a work in progress.
I wanted to ask it because you have both types of engagements and experience, and you can kind of see the difference. And yeah, there's coaching stance, but there's also leadership in some ways. And maybe this can relate to my next question, which is going back to the idea that you're also helping and working on strategy often, right, with the business. So with that dual remit, you're coaching the exec team leaders as well as working with them to help figure out like the strategy. When a people leader or a CHRO, chief people officer, is co-designing the strategy, could you just tell me what that looks like? Because I think most people leaders are thinking they're part of it, right? They're executing on the people strategy, which is the biggest resource and the most amount of money and spent in the entire organization, and they're looking to create leverage for that. But when you say you're working on strategy for the organization itself, I think it'd be helpful for me and for the audience to clarify that distinction.
Sure. So when we think about it from the people lens, we think about developing the skill set for the individuals, and that could be hard skills, of course, right, depending on what they do for a job, and then all the soft skills. And we have developed a program called Cultivating Leaders, playing on the agricultural element. So that's on the soft skills side of it. That's critically important and always will be within the remit for us as people leaders. The element of strategy to understand, okay, so this is the people and strategy piece. So here's the people working on them. Then to understand the strategy, you need to get into the guts of the business. So you got to look at what is the value chain? What are all the key functions that need to happen in this organization? And what are the interdependencies between those key functions? And what's working and what isn't, right? And how well does everybody understand that? And so to start that, we got to dig deep, right? And look at each key function and start to really itemize what happens under this heading, right? So if it's fleet, facility, sales, marketing, right? What are all of the things that need to happen? And structure in a workshop format and extract a deep understanding. And that can accelerate depending on where the organization is. If they've got the answers already, you're already there. If they don't, then you start with that work. And the upside of the closer they are on that scale of we know, obviously, because we've been doing this for years and years, but as is commonly the case, there's a distinction between knowing it and then being able to really articulate it. And in the articulation, you can identify, okay, well, what's working and what isn't. And so in that work of bringing it out, the exercise itself is a massive education for everybody in the room, including the people that have been doing it for years. And now you start to identify the patterns, right? And I know that part of our conversation here, of course, is about AI. AI has been really fundamental, central to this work of taking all of the outputs to that as one of the early exercises that I ran with this organization and starting to inject those transcripts into my large language models and saying, okay, what do you see? What are the patterns? And bringing those back up and then using that, which again is a coaching practice, as coaches, we're reflective practitioners, right? We go, here's what we heard. We hold that up as a mirror and say, what does this mean to you? And so you do that on the organizational front, go, here's what I'm hearing. Here are the patterns. And people are like, oh yeah, that is, we do struggle here, right? You can have a visceral response usually when you bring that up, everyone's like, oh man, yeah, that's a thing, right? Yeah. Okay, so let's put that in the list of things that we need to think about to help, again, gain a deeper understanding of, and what do we need to do differently there to change the outcomes, right? Where are the enablers and blockers embedded in all of this? as you go all the way through and understanding that at the end of that value chain sits the customer. So how well do we understand that customer? So to do that, I would bring back in the strategizer framework to say, how well do you understand your business model? And again, it's amazing when you really unpack that, because so I grew up in this business. I understand how to do this. And they do. The evidence is clear. And so when you get into this, okay, how will you articulate your business model? What is your value proposition? Or do you have multiple elements to your value proposition? How are you driving that to your customer segment? How are you keeping that alive? How do you make money? And then what are the backstage, as we refer to in the business model world, of what are your key activities and resources and partnerships that are enabling this work? And what are the costs that are associated, and how well do you understand that profit formula that sits at the underpinning of a business model? Now, so to get to that level and understand that, put it all together, you then say, okay, so then how are we activating our people in this? And where are they getting stuck? Where are the places they're like, okay, we're going, it's working, and then boom, here we continually stall, right? Then we understand, okay, should we even be doing this, right? We can answer that more effectively when we understand. Well, yeah, because we checked it against the flow of work. Or maybe no, we don't even know why we do this anymore. Things have changed, whatever the case may be, right? So you got to kind of go into the source code of the business to then understand it in a way that you can start to diagnose and interrogate each piece so that you understand what to do differently going forward.
So if I understand this right, it's part understanding the org chart, but really that's just a holding spot for the overall value chain, starting from why a customer would buy all the way down to all the internal guts of everything. So it's almost like a big process map of the entire organization that you're bringing out for people who might be in little pieces of it, but are not fully aware of what's happening. And it might be like, you feel that viscerally, I'm seeing when someone puts a name to something that they've been seeing in terms of how they're collaborating across groups. And the tactics here involved to enable this, it sounds that typically goes beyond what a coach or a CHRO tends to do, is probably, let me ask you. So I think it involves like interviewing, obviously, like you're talking to key individuals in different groups, but then you're also studying internal docs to really put the pieces together to understand, and then also asking a lot of questions with the right framing and the right groups that are not so much about how do you work, but how does this work?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a combination of all of that. And you mentioned org chart. Org chart is the secondary piece. We layer that on top of this. This is, I would say, the source. We do that exactly. So my method is always try to start as small as you can with the people that have a very informed opinion and extract everything you can from them. So that's what I did is I sat with the core senior leadership ownership team and went through all of the key functions, sales, service, parts, key critical for us, fleet, facility, all of those things, right? And really interrogated each one. What are all the critical things? And then all of that output, I then, to your point, go to others and go, hey, this is what we think this is. What do you think? So that we're not starting with a blank slate, right? And they're now helping us edit and we're iterating on the understanding. And so by the end of it, we get to a really concise and pretty fully thought through opinion of what is needed in each one. And in pockets, I got, oh, no, you're missing a whole thing over here. Or their reflection was, no, that's not how it is. And what the learning was for me was, actually, that is how it is. This is how the business needs to run. But your understanding of it is now, I'm getting some clarity in terms of how you understand it. And now, as a result, might be able to see why this isn't working so well, right? And that might be because you simply need to understand it better, or very occasionally, maybe this just isn't the right role for you, right? You might be in a position that isn't the best suited, and you're in a position of influence. So we need to rethink this, right? So how do we partner with you to get this to work well? What do you need? What support do you need from us? So that all comes out of that exercise. And then you elevate that to say, okay, so then how does the org chart look? Over and above this. And so that now you're putting the people into it. So you start with the functions, and now you're putting the people into it. And then of course, the next layer is that, do you have the right people? Do they have what they need? Where are they enabled? Where are they blocked? What training do they need? Do we need to, the classic Jim Collins, change your people or change your people, or whoever we ascribe that saying to, that's the part that starts to service us back into the people part, right? So we go into the
right.
Deep into the strategy, into workings, and now we go into the people part and say, okay, now let's layer that on top and see where we're at, where we are.
This has been a fantastic conversation so far. If you haven't already done so, make sure to join our community. We're building a network of the most forward-thinking HR and people operations professionals who are defining the future. I will personally be sharing news and ideas around how we can all thrive in the age of AI. You can find it at gocleary.com/cleary-community. Now back to the show. And I guess simplistically, the counter model that's most prevalent is that first part, however deeply it is done in terms of understanding the value chain and how the different parts of the business interact with each other and the market, is in some ways delivered to the chief people officer, right? Or they're a customer of it, or they assume it as an input into everything that they're doing. But there is, and I thank you for going through that a little bit in some detail, is that there is an opportunity, and depending on the organization and the context, for the person in this seat to actually go in upstream a little bit and dig and find and create value that can help align the entire organization and also your own, including your own downstream work, which is working on tuning the people, not just the system itself.
Right.
So you mentioned some of this, but how has AI impacted this work that you do? So we talked about executive coaching and individual coaching, a strategy work, and just like being the chief people officer, right? And in some depth about some of the processes and things that you're doing day to day. So how is this revolution that we're in the midst of changed things so far?
Yeah, and boy, has it ever. I think the timing is amazing for me, certainly, and many who are in this type of work, to have access to a tool like this and knowing that the tool like this is just in this moment, who knows what it's going to be going forward. So that example that I gave, taking outputs, right? So I do that regularly. I record, and of course, from an ethic perspective, make sure everybody knows that everything's being recorded, and everything that's going to come out of it is an amalgamation of what's recorded. It's extracting the themes, the key learnings. It's not about, hey, you said this and now we have you on record. And so I take that output and I run it through, I use ChatGPT. So I run it through the bot and I prompt and I really engage with it. So I consider AI a thought partner. I will put that into the bot and say, okay, so here's a conversation I had. It was about this. To give you some context, what are the patterns you're seeing? What are the key points? What are the action items? And it'll, of course, extract all of that, right? And then I'll iterate with it. And I'll say, here, I want to drill down into this part, right? So you notice that there's pockets that you saw a pattern that said waiting for, right? We're waiting for this. We're waiting for this. So you've noticed that as a pattern. Expand on that. Where are we waiting? And then, and or that'll be in itself a point that I'll take back to the organization. Say, clearly, this is where we're stuck, right? We're waiting here. So where in the flow can we start to change the process, or what needs to happen to unlock that? And so I'm in this exchange all the time. And then over time, I'm building like a relationship with this technology that has a preloaded understanding. So the answers are evolving to say, well, based on your environment, here's some thoughts, here's some ideas, right? Knowing that Equipment Ontario is striving to do this, consider this based on now the information you've just put in. Let me suggest a framing for you that might be more valuable as you go back into the next conversation. Over time, it's really evolving into, like I said, like a genuine thought partner that I am also feeding my thoughts into. My core concepts, the tools that I use in my work and in my practice, and educating the tool, right? To say, these are the things that are important to me and that I understand, so that as I'm working with the data that comes out of it, it gives me an additional edge by framing some of its own outputs in a language that makes sense to me, right? So it's a game changer, because it doesn't invent new ideas for me, right? The ideas are captured in the data and or my own concepts, right? As I process them, but it's formatting it in a way, categorizing it in a way that really simplifies. And then, of course, the actual output that I share, ultimately share back to the stakeholders, is refined. It absolutely accelerates that. That's, I think, in its most basic form, it'll do that. It'll take a bunch of data and go, here's your key points, here's the bullet points. If anyone's taking those bullet points and just going, here, this is, we're really missing it. Like, the interpretation piece remains with the human. And I think that's a critically important element of it, right? Like, we need to take that data, make sense of it, and identify, okay, so you've established these patterns, but which are the patterns that need to be highlighted? Which ones are the ones that have the most meaning? We'll have the most understanding of the context to the degree that I do as the person that's in the mix of it, right? So, yeah, so it's a real partner for me, and I certainly use it regularly.
So thanks for going through that. And it sounds like it's a pattern that I've seen many times for tasks that are important and sensitive, which obviously coaching it falls into that, where the data is sensitive and the outcomes and how it's presented is sensitive, where AI can help with the analysis phase in a particular task, which is hidden within the multiple steps and brings those steps in the middle to an outcome faster. So the input and the output is controlled by you, the human, with a lot of context and massaging, and the intermediate steps where you, as a coach, it's not replacing any conversations. You're not doing an AI bot conversation. You're not getting a presentation out to the group automatically. Even though some of these things are possible, I don't know, you can debate the quality. It's interesting to like kind of talk through or understand where you landed in terms of a process so far with that. So then if you look forward, do you think the increase, the growing up of this technology and the increased prevalence of it over time, is it going to reduce or increase the demand for human coaches?
That's obviously, it's a very tricky space. I think that the prevalence of coaching will increase simply because I think there's an accessibility that AI is going to enable, right? So it's going to enable more coaching, right? It's going to reduce costs. And so I guess the upshot of what I'm trying to say here is that more people might move towards coaching as a result. There may even be an interpretation of it, for anyone who is holding back to work with a coach because of any sort of insecurities or sense of like, I don't want to share this with another person. There might be that, right? They might feel they can bridge it more easily, right? Mm-hmm. I can't really reflect on generational differences, but maybe younger generations with a higher, potentially innate comfort with technology, right? So all of that might be true. I think when you consider the advancements, and even if we look at who's the AI actress, Tilly Norwood.
AI actress?
Yeah. Have you seen this?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Google this. This is quite a thing. So there is created a real stir in Hollywood, right? This AI actress. You look at the footage, you're like, no, that's just an actress. That's a human being acting. Mm. Hollywood is reacting, going, you can't call that thing an actor, right? It's all technology. But if you look at that interface, it's remarkable. It is, she's a human. And I don't know if you use voice-enabled AI. I imagine you do. I certainly do regularly. And so the tone, and I genuinely get like a real experience, as all of us, I would imagine, do, having this exchange with this. So the voice, and then you advance it to the point where you've got a physical presence of somebody in this modality, which we've all normalized completely. So how would you ever know? So again, these are things that many are thinking about. And so you get to that level. Yeah, that's a real challenge, I would think, for coaching as an industry, because now as an individual, I could just define what is the exact right look and tone of the individual that I want to be on the screen with. And then this individual has, of course, unlimited access to every right question and framing. And as, you know, AI's AGI develops, and maybe we get to artificial superintelligence, which is likely the scariest future in my view anyways, but even just getting to artificial general intelligence, where there's a level of nuanced response that this AI bot can just respond, like you and I are, I mean, with empathy and understanding and contextual, and if it gets to the point where it can actually pick up on facial expression and all those things, right? Then for sure, it's absolutely a different game. But there's a consideration here that is, we think about coaching. We think about that as a title that sort of we broad stroke it. And the truth is just a variety of different types of coaching. I wonder if maybe in life coaching, which is not something I tend to do, like that might be more at risk in terms of what that industry looks like for humans. It's possible, but it wouldn't require that level of advancement, right? Because that is the
right.
That life coaches bring is that ability to really see you, connect with you, make you feel seen and heard, like genuinely. And that to this point requires a human being. So I don't know if the technology evolves or changes to enable that, but I do think it'll augment. I mean, I'm a real believer, like I said earlier, is I use the tool to coach me, not to coach Mike. I will record a transcript and say, what did you hear me say? What could I have done differently? And it'll come up with recommendations. Sometimes it's valid.
Right.
Most of times it's just kind of a repeated thing. But it's that part of it, I think, is really worthwhile. But again, to use it as a partner, a thought partner, terrific. To replace coaching, there's some risk. We'll see how the technology evolves over time.
And then what about in the world of, from the CPO chair and people operations chair, have you conducted any experiments leveraging AI or any examples where it's made you or the team faster, better, or failed experiments as well?
Yeah, I think if I look at the broad body of work that we've done, I ran a feedback survey, I call it the yield check, and playing on the agriculture.
Nice.
Yeah. And so pulling that in all of the insights and sort of running helping to frame out, okay, here's what we want to know, right? Here's the key things. Help me build a form, right? So pretty simple, right? So, you know, here it builds a form, fire everything out, get all the inputs, right? And now help me translate that, right? To really understand what's the core issue, extracting all those things. And where I would say I wouldn't say failure, because I don't let AI run unchecked. I would never just go here, direct connect between output and to audience. But embedded in there, for sure, there's misinterpretations, lost tone, I would say, like some of the things that it was recommends saying might be too harsh for what the audience really needs, and it kind of misses that. So anyway, interpreting all of that output and then using that into, okay, here's the feedback. Here's what I'm sending out to. And then to run one more, say, what am I missing? What should I watch out for? And think about the context. So I'm saying to a group of people with expectations, here's what we heard. Here's what we're suggesting. Here's some actions that we're going to take. What do I need to watch out for? And it gives some obvious things. It's do the thing that you're saying you're going to do, so on and so forth. But it's good to just, again, sense check all the way through. And so it's helped to build that out. The exercise that I was talking about earlier, that deep sort of interrogation of the value chain, I use that to then evolve into a structure using a responsible team and inform, right? So it's a version of sort of a rate RTI, or it's actually the ROTI, but I took out the ownership piece just to make it more accessible to the group that I'm working with. So this RTI framework, responsible team and informed. And so I said, okay, help me start to frame this. And again, using that as the first iteration, because then I took it to the humans and said, here's what I think people should be responsible for, and the team should be responsible for, and here's where the leader should be informed. And what do you think? Help me evolve this and make it real. And so again, now it's almost like the three of us as stakeholders, me, AI, and the leadership team, we're really working in collaboration to co-create the final product. And at this point, AI took a back seat, right? It's done its work. Now it's us as a group of humans coming together to say, okay, how do we really make this come to life? So if we need to understand this particular critical leadership role and through the lens of RTI, okay, what are we making real? And let's debate it and then agree to it. So now going forward, we can all say this role looks like this. And we all agreed. Everyone had a voice and we brought that. But it was such an enabler to accelerate that. I would say we could have done that work without it, but it would have taken weeks and weeks, maybe months versus days. We really got that thing done fast.
Just an idea based on what you're saying. I wonder if there is an internal product that could also be coming out of this, where I know the inputs initially are private, confidential interviews, and there's the transcript from that, but then that is then translated through a lot of conversations into a set of intermediate output, which could also then be part of an LLM, which then anyone in the organization maybe could interrogate for questions of the moment where they're trying to understand, either poke holes at some of the logic or continue to evolve it. And it's almost like a shared understanding of our strategy, right? It's like this internal brain of all these answers that we've spent all this time drafting through all these conversations and heavy thought outside of the tooling itself.
I love that idea, Thomas. It's such a good thought. Like, to even have a space where the questions are captured, right? Because there's so much insight in the question, right? We start to see patterns in the questions that people ask, or the type of questions, or the language of the question. And so how do we extract all that? And I think there's an amazing opportunity to do that, right? This sort of knowledge base that doesn't just sit there statically and go, here's all of the thing that were said. It interprets it. It runs some analysis on it and says, hey, catching this, we're getting a lot of these questions. I have to think that there's that technology exists somewhere. I don't doubt it. I mean, this knowledge base is attached to all our software platforms. I'm imagining that they're already well into leveraging AI for it. But I think internally within our organization, if we could create that connection, I think there would be such a quick sort of input output sort of response, because we'd be able to extract that and get signals and patterns that we could start to evolve. You know, where are we focusing our attentions and what's more important? How are we prioritizing it? I think that would be hugely helpful and informative. So
yeah, it's interesting. The technology exists, but it's more about the proprietary data, right? That it takes a lot of time and effort, that what you've been talking about in terms of getting out and creating all this alignment around across dozens and dozens of people. Yeah. That's like a little bit of the secret sauce, I would think. But then if I were to say, let's look ahead. So we've been talking about how it's been impacting the work so far. If you're looking ahead a little bit, but not too far out, let's not talk about AGI. Or ASI, I guess that's open for interpretation around what that might look like. But let's just say in the next 2 or 3 years, what do you think it means to have an AI native workforce, and especially people and strategy team? What does that look like for you?
Well, I think it really is staying curious as to how do we pull this tool further in? How do we really socialize the value of what I'm doing? And I'm already starting to see it, frankly, as the tools that I'm using, I'm sort of informally encouraging others to start to do the same. And we're seeing it across the organization. So I would say over the next 2 years, what would be ideal is that we evolve to this just becomes table stakes. Even if we were to say, okay, well, hold it, freeze in time, the tools as they stand today, from a recording perspective, what changes and so on. Just doing this, but then again, using some real thought around, okay, but how do we use it? Because I think if we were to suddenly just push that out to the whole complex of all of our team and individuals, I think people might start to create some shortcuts. They might misinterpret a little bit of the value. But I think if we slowly embed this into, here are the ways in which we can accelerate. So I'll give you an example, actually, that's top of mind, is that we're rolling out a new platform, sort of a CRM platform that's really common in our industry. And like all CRMs and all sales teams, and I say this authentically, having been in that seat for many, many years, it's often a challenge to get the data into the system, right? It's one of the things that the managers always complain, it's got to be in the CRM, right? And so immediately I think, well, how can we then leverage the tools that are the most basic form? Like, how can we have our team recording coming out of, so our group works in farms, right? So they go, coming off the farm, and before you drive to the next farm, you say, hey, here's what I just narrating, what it is that you experienced, what are the action items, and just having that all immediately, obviously the transcript gets produced immediately, and then trying to create a link as quickly as possible, still probably a human link, at least for now, right? In the prototype as we're inventing it, to just say, okay, extract the key pieces, drop that into the CRM. It's rudimentary, but huge time savings, right? And really, if this works, it would create a level of sort of efficacy in this, right? Because that doesn't necessarily always exist. Because again, as salespeople, we get caught up, we come out of one meeting into the next. I don't doubt that there's already huge advancements out there with recording devices and things that are already happening. I think that is an immediately accessible way for us to integrate the tools, again, in its most basic form. Then the next thing is, well, how can we get some kind of insights out of it? How can it drive some ideas? How can it make some connections between what's in our inventory and what you just said was important to this farmer that you just spoke to, mm-hmm. and start to drive things at you to say, hey, are you aware that over here in this part of the broad complex, we have physical locations right across Northern Ontario, that you have an awareness of what's happening there. And instead of you having to do the research, we're leveraging AI to drive it at you. Those are ways that, while, you know, on the surface of it, feel relatively easy and accessible, boy, they would make a huge, huge difference in terms of our sales cycle and then ultimately our success. So I see ranging from that to, again, in the leadership space, doing the work that I've been describing and really expanding that to see what happens next.
Absolutely. So that's just a few different ideas there. I'm sure there's so many others that you'll have as it clicks in the moment and you're going through all these different use cases. Yeah. Where can folks connect with you, Andy? Is LinkedIn the best place? Or
it's likely the best place. I have it on the long list of things to do to build out a Wednesday. But yeah, LinkedIn is a great place to get a hold of me. I'm always on it. I'll certainly respond quickly.
That's great. I guess patterns drive all outcomes. And a lot of your coaching practice that we went through in detail is trying to surface those patterns. We talked a little bit about how AI can help in that process, but it's a part of the process and it's in the analysis phase, not in the data collection or output phase or as much in your workflows as I understand it. And thank you for that. We spent a lot of time talking about how the coaching stance translates into the people leadership role in combination and the nuances there, which I think folks listening can appreciate and take some insights around, and as well as I think defined in depth what it means to influence and or drive the strategy at the company level. And at some level, how it's really about looking at the machine, the system, in the same way that you might as a coach for the people. And then it will inform everything downstream. And that's, to me, it's a very practical way to grab the proverbial seat at the table by having a lot of influence and creating value. Thank you for going through that. There's a lot of opportunities for the HR and people function to stay very relevant and make a big impact as we steer through this revolution that we're in the midst of, because the common thread around using analysis for AI for the analysis phase of so many different tasks that you do, I think can help open up time to get us out into more strategic activities on a day-to-day basis. So with all that said, I want to say thank you, Andy, and for this great conversation, and for everyone out there who is following along and future-proofing your own organizations, your own HR functions. Hope you had some great takeaways, as I did from this wonderful conversation. See you on the next one.
Thanks so much, Thomas.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Future Proof HR. If you like the discussion, make sure you leave us a 5-star review on the platform you're listening to or watching us on, or share this with a friend or colleague who may find value in the message. See you next time as we keep our pulse on how we can all thrive in the age of AI. Hey, it's Thomas again. One quick question before you go. Are you and your HR team tired of answering the same employee questions again and again in Slack? If yes, our Cleary AI-powered Slack bot is here to help. It takes routine employee requests and answers it automatically while freeing up time for you to take on more important tasks. At the same time, it automatically builds up an HR knowledge base as you go. It's quick to set up, works right in Slack, and you can try it for free. Just head on over to gocleary.com/HR-chatbot to install it. It's again, gocleary.com/HR-chatbot. Thanks again.